Hey, this is Jalen Noll, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, citizens of the universe, this is Roster Watch. My name is Alex Dunlap. I'm joined by Cody Carpentier. And Cody, today we're going to be talking about our final wide receiver rankings for the 2025 NFL Draft. A good rookie class, I guess. Maybe not. Some good players here at the very top. Then it gets hard to sort of who's where, what buckets what. It feels like our rankings could be wildly divergent from other people's, and frankly, I tend to like it that way. We go through the process. We make sure to go to all the events. We see their Senior Bowls and their Shrine Bowls, and a lot of their pro days. And we're certainly at the combine, and then the workouts at the combine training facilities and the stuff with the trainers, and we've gotten really good networks and good information loops with these players. And so it's not to say that it is a bad year at wide receiver. It's just to say it's nothing like the running back group.
It's nothing like the running back group, because the running back group has a bunch of ones and a bunch of starters and a bunch of alphas. And my best way to open up this conversation personally would be to say, I think this receiving group is very solid, and it's a lot of twos. There's some potential for these guys to be alphas, but it's a lot of preferred twos in a class that even guys that – there's people out there that love Tet McMillan. They love Matthew Golden from Texas. They love these certain players, and there's potential for them. But I think if you're being realistic with yourself and you take some truth serum, it's a lot of number twos that you'd prefer in an offense.
Yeah. As far as number one on our list, it's like, is number one, is he going to play wide receiver? And so it's like, what we made the decision is like, look, we're going to treat Travis Hunter from Colorado, who is one, everybody listening to this knows, but just in case they don't, he plays both wide receiver and corner. And lately he's been talking about how he thinks he can do it in the league. I'm not sure he can do it in the NFL, but he's been a complete unicorn during his time at Colorado, being able to do this. And I can't say that he can't do it, because I would have said that he can't play 130 snaps per game at Colorado, and he just goes and does it. So what we said is, if we're going to just be ranking him as purely a wide receiver, he's the best wide receiver in the class. And that's what makes him such a special prospect. It's like, it's why, at two and three, after presumably Cam Ward goes at number one to the Tennessee Titans, it's why it's just why it's blocks, that those two picks are probably going to be Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter, just because those are the two guys that are the top two position players in the draft. And it's very clear whenever you watch them. And it's why even a team like Cleveland, even if they were in love with Shedeur Sanders, I think it would be super hard there. And it's why the Patriots are just praying, please just take Shedeur Sanders at two, or at three, and let one of these two fall to us. So for me, Travis Hunter, his suddenness, his movements, his ability to stem, his just – it's been since 2014 where I've just seen players who can just such natural catchers of the football, like the way that he is, the way he sees the ball in, his tracking, his framing – just the super, super solid hands. He just has everything. And so if we knew he were going to play wide receiver, we would say like, well, this is a lock. This is super easy at the top, just like Ashton Jeanty. But the problem is he might get drafted as a cornerback, mm-hmm. and play 15% of snaps and there's just some kind of offensive set. So for fantasy, it's going to be different. But as far as the prospect rankings, Cody, Travis Hunter, certainly here at the very top.
Certainly here at the very top. And I think I've said it before, but when you look at what Travis Hunter brings to the table, he's a top 10 graded player at corner. He's a top 10 graded player at receiver. And the comp that I came away with off the jump a couple months ago was more of a stylistic comp than anything. And I don't think he has quite the speed, but Jameson Williams in how his frame is built and his ball skills. I think Hunter, one of his key traits is just his ball skills. And when I opened up this conversation saying it's a class full of preferred twos, this is the one guy. This is the one guy that if you told yourself a story that he never played cornerback another down in his life, you could say this is the one guy in this class at the receiver position that could get to the Justin Jefferson conversation, get to that tier. But he's not going to not play corner. He's going to definitely be playing corner at least a little bit, maybe potentially as his sole position in the NFL, which is
my how can you not play him at wide receiver? If we were talking about a guy, like you said, it's got Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. It's like he has that level upside. I just don't understand.
It's maniacal, literally.
It's like good problem to have if you're a team or if you're Hunter. Or I haven't really thought about this until just now. If he does do the unimaginable and plays both ways and is good, is as good as he's projected to be at both, like you said, a top 10 overall player in the whole draft at both positions. Does he get paid like the 30 million wide receiver plus the 25 million, 25 million corner? Like, or is it some kind of, I don't even, they're like, he breaks the rules of how compensation even works in the league. How would they do that? Does he get paid like two players? He's taking two spots on the rot or two spots on the actual like all 22 for as far as the players on the field.
I think it comes down to at the point in time that his contract will be up. So in 3 years, they'll probably start negotiating and having those conversations. Point is, I think the answer to this would be, well, if he's a top five corner and he's a top 10 receiver, he's probably going to make, he might make, you know, top three money overall between the two positions, right?
No,
but what you're saying is he's not only hypothetically your 53rd player, he's your 52nd and your 53rd player, mm-hmm. right? He's taking up two positions, allowing you to have one less guy at that position or one more guy at a different position. So there's a value in it from that perspective too.
Hope he's got a smart agent. He needs to get paid like two people if he's going to be playing.
Well, I don't know if you can get two people is.
He's going to need to be the highest paid. He's going to need to be the highest paid player in the league.
If you're the highest paid corner, so the top salary right now is Jair and Denzel Ward. 24 million in the secondary.
I thought it was closer to 27, but all right. So say, just say 20, all right, 25 million bucks.
These are the cap hits. So total cash, I guess is probably different here. Total cash top of the league at cornerback
isn't it Stingley now?
I thought it was, but that was fresh. So it should be in here. This is wrong. I don't know why this is here.
I think Stingley's something like 30 million.
I thought he was too, because it was Stingley, because then Horn got his deal after Stingley, right?
It's just all right. So we say 30 million. And then what's the Jamar Chase?
40. So Jefferson, 35. Lamb's 34.
Sure. Well, it's probably, I'm not sure you're going to be able to, if he's as good as people think he's going to be and as good as he's projected, I'm not sure you can pay him 70 million.
No, that's the thing. The thing is, he kind of creates his own bridge between positions and quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think he needs to. Yeah, I have no idea how it would even work. I hope he has a smart agent. Well, I'm sure he does. All right, but anyway, after Travis Hunter, as we said, we don't know what's going to happen with him. I think as far as dynasty rookie drafts, it's risky to take him before, you know, the, you know, we've gone through one, but like the 107, something like that, you know, it's, I think is where it becomes sort of viable as far as, non super flex. If he gets drafted as a wide receiver, of course, that'll all change and it'll all be reflected in the Dynasty Rookie cheat sheet, which will be available. It'll be basically available and updated through day three, the Saturday of the NFL draft over at rosterwatch.com. Number two, again, is unanimous for us between Cody, Trashman, and myself. We all have Matthew Golden from Texas here, 5'11", 191, 9.5-inch hands, of course, ran the 4.29 40 at the NFL Combine, did not run at Pro Day, because why would you? We sort of have him stylistically as a mix of Stephon Diggs, Jordan Addison, and Odell Beckham Jr., which obviously to be able to invoke those kinds of names means that we have a lot of respect for his game. We were able to watch him closely through every game this season. The one thing that kind of would give you hesitance about him is that he didn't start the season the same way that he ended the season. And that, a lot of that stuff coincided with Isaiah Bond at Texas becoming a little bit injured, not getting on the same page with Quinn Ewers as far as the deep ball, and generally falling out of favor with the team because of some off-field and personality stuff. Golden was the exact opposite. It was like he began developing a mind meld with Quinn Ewers, and through the most important meet of the schedule down the stretch, started doing things that were just unbelievable, making the circus catches, doing the stuff with the contorting the body control, the unbelievable hands. It's really that reminds you so much of Odell Beckham. Cody, you always had the Jordan Addison comp for him, and makes sense when he showed us that 4.29 speed. And people say he didn't really look like his play speed is 4.29. And to me, I'm like, well, that's the same thing we talked about with Adonai Mitchell. Whenever he came in, and everybody was expecting 4.5s, and he did what he did. I forgot what he was. It was a 4.38.
Yep.
At Texas, you know, and this is what Matthew Golden said, you know, at Texas in the role that I was in, I wasn't asked to run a 4.29. You know, I was asked to be the quarterback's best friend. I was asked to move the chains. I was asked to make the absolute clutch catches during the most important times in the biggest football games. And that's exactly what he did.
It's exactly what he said on Twitter. Wasn't my job to run 4.2 in my offense, bud. And you can't say it any better than that. Like people that adjusted their ranks post combine because of a 4.2 for Matthew Golden are attacking the process wrong. When you watch Matthew Golden,
it certainly made me feel better about having him as one overall. Sans Hunt, he was my wide receiver one, if you don't consider Travis there. Yeah. But I didn't change it, but it made me feel better. It certainly made me feel better. It was a very, very, very nice sweetener as far as his overall profile to get that 4.29.
I'll say I definitely there was an adjustment made on my behalf, but it wasn't because of him. It was because of a guy we'll talk about in a minute, Luther Burden, kind of pseudo having a situation to go south, and Matthew Golden just kind of innately came north because I thought he was going to run mid 4.4s. He runs faster. That's good, but I think he's a really good receiver. I have Jordan Addison as the comp. Jordan Addison was a first round pick. He's a very, very, very good number two in the NFL right now. We know Golden has very strong hands. We know he can win a lot of different ways. His route tree is very diverse. If you look at the routes run, he didn't run any one route more than 20% of the time in the NFL, in college football this past year, according to Sumer Sports. So, a lot of good stuff on the profile for Matthew Golden, and a guy that, like you said, didn't come into the season as the planned number one. That was supposed to be Isaiah Bond, right? That was Gunnar Helm clearly for Texas at the beginning of the season. But when Matthew Golden's name was called, and this is the big thing, everyone says, well, he wasn't the number one. Why didn't his numbers, why didn't he have 1,000 yards? Well, that wasn't the plan. But guess what? When his name was called, his number was called, he caught the football, he made the plays, he had the 160 yards, he helped that team get to the national semifinals. He helped that team get to the SEC championship, right? And they don't get there without him. That's the biggest thing.
No, man. He's a very, very, very talented, skilled guy, super fast. He's got the, and whenever you see that he's got the burners, you just say that, you know, when he has so much else going on with his skill set, it's just Matt Golden, man, is just awesome, awesome player. We actually have, and these are our consensus rankings. We have Emeka Egbuka and Teteroa McMillan tied for third here. I have Egbuka at four. So does Trashman. Cody, you have him at three. And then for Ted McMillan, Cody, you have him at five. Trashman and I both have him at three. So it's an average of 3.67. So we used to have them tied. Very, very different players. Ted McMillan, of course, an outside weapon from Arizona, best friends with his quarterback, Noah Fifita. Talk about a mind meld. Those two have been friends since they were tiny, tiny, tiny little kids. McMillan, if you were to watch him, my comp for him is Michael Pittman. The most common comp that you hear for him is Drake London, which I think is a good comp. Just a big, tall guy, 6 foot, 220 pounds, 10-inch hands, 4.58 pro day adjusted 40 time. That's adjusted up from the reported 4.53, which was his best run. But, you know, a junior who came out early, whereas Emeka Egbuka played his whole time at Ohio State, played alongside some of the really good wide receivers that they've had. We know that it's been wide receiver U, thought of as a slot guy, but there have been players that have been thought of as slot only come into the NFL that have really good, just solid, well-rounded skill sets, the same way that Emeka Egbuka does. I'm not saying Justin Jefferson is Emeka Egbuka, but remember that was the line on him is he can only play slot. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true about Egbuka. He's 6'1", 202 pounds, not a total speed burner. The comp that we have for him is we have Robert Woods. I see Jarvis Landry is on here. Chris Olave. Cody, you have Egbuka ranked as your wide receiver three in this in these rankings, where we have Travis Hunter as the number one guy. So you're a little bit higher on him than we are, a little bit lower on McMillan. What is your reason? I think it's fine, but what is your reasoning for it?
I'm just a little more worried about the Teteroa McMillan archetype. He ran dry a lot of games. The better way of saying that is just lacked elite consistency. I think a lot of people are running out right now to compare Teteroa McMillan to the best case scenario, which is a Drake London type that went top 10 overall. They're saying T. Higgins, they're saying Mike Evans, all these guys that are supreme situation, like alphas in their offenses, clear cut in college. And yes, Teteroa was the alpha in his offense, and he's had a great 3 years there with Fifita. There's no arguing that, but he was very hot and he was very cold in certain situations. We know he can move. He played volleyball in high school. It shows in his contested catch targets, contested catch completions. The vertical, I think, was only like 32 or 33, 34 inches, something like this. Ran slower than expected. Again, doesn't kill his profile because you didn't think he was going to be a 4.44 guy. Kind of the inverse the other way is he runs a 4.53. We adjust to a 4.58. It's not great, but it definitely doesn't hurt his profile. I just, when I look at the profile of Ted McMillan historically, and I'm not going to say the name that I wrote in the, I mean, I'll say it, I don't care. I mean, when you think about it, like a guy that was a better athlete than Teteroa McMillan and didn't have quite the output because his quarterback play and situations are situational, Equanimeous St. Brown, Notre Dame. He's a fine prospect. He went in the sixth round, but he's a very good athlete. The brother of Amon Ra, Justin Ross from Clemson, a guy that dealt with injuries in his time at Clemson, but he was a little bit leaner. I didn't see a bona fide alpha build. He was, I think I walked up to Alex at the combine. I was like, man, he's a little bit of a flat Stanley. He's a little bit of a sunken chest kind of a situation. I just, when I'm trying to evade misses, and I'm trying to be right. I want to be right. I'm going to be right on Emeka Egbuka because I know Emeka Egbuka is good. I know Emeka Egbuka is going to be good in the pros, and it's a more consistent, dependable piece. And when you hear the comps of Robert Woods, Jarvis Landry, Chris Olave, you think of consistency. You think of 10-year vet. You think of things like this. When I think of Ted McMillan, I think that there's potential there. But as far as longevity, consistency, I think there's more flags on the Teteroa McMillan profile than there aren't. And so for that reason, Tet's going to be lower for me than Emeka Egbuka and Luther Burden, who's number four from Missouri. And both Emeka Egbuka and Luther Burden fit my flavor at the wide receiver position. And that flavor is that archetype. That archetype is 5'11 to 6 foot. It's the 190 to 205 pounds. The guys that run around that 4.45, 4.50 area, they play some slot, but they got really good hands and they're really meaty and they're really aggressive and they're dependable.
A lot of products say they're clean, but what does that mean? Ritual has high standards for what clean means, like their essential prenatal multivitamin, which is heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and GMO-free. It features key mom-to-baby nutrients like folate, choline, and omega-3. Clean isn't clean enough, especially during pregnancy. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you mentioned the comparing a Mekhi Egbuka to the 10-year vets and talked about Chris Olave, let's just knock on wood and hope that that's true, please. all right, so on to the next one. You said it best. Technically not the fourth, but the fifth, because we have two guys tied for three. So our wide receiver five is Luther Burden from Missouri, 6 feet, 205 pounds. Tiny, tiny hands at just 8.5 inches, which is certainly a red flag for me. I know it's a red flag for Cody. He ran his 40 in a 4.41. We see him as sort of a Terry McLaurin type. I think I see some Zay Flowers in his game. That's when I watched 2023. The problem with Luther Burden from 2023 to 2024 is that I don't know. I've tried and looked and looked and looked and looked. I still can't find the proper answer as to what happened with the Missouri offense to make Luther Burden not as good this last season. I can't. It's the same quarterback, same system. Cody talks about how he thinks that it could have been the running game, and Cody,
Schrader.
Cody Schrader leaving, was a detriment to the running game, even though they had a greater explosive run rate this last year than they did whenever Schrader was there in 2023. I don't really understand it. I don't get it. I feel weird about it. We were at the SEC league meeting or the SEC media days back in July. Luther Burden walks in there. We're looking at this dude and we're looking at Milroe and some of these other players as guys who are going to be like lock first round picks. Some of the definite faces of dynamism in the SEC, and we didn't see it from him this year. It's like we talked about Ollie Gordon last season or last show. It's like from 2023 to 2024, Luther Burden's ascent feels similar to that. I know you probably have a lot to say about the guy. I will say this: whenever he is going full steam and he is in his element and he's playing like he was during stretches of 2023, I'm not sure there's any of these guys that have, outside of Hunter, that have the same kind of change of direction or, just acceleration and velocity and burst out of their cuts. It's like, it looks superhuman. And I just didn't see it as much this year. It gave me a little bit of a tap the brakes with Burden.
Well, like I said before, he was a guy that, for me, about a month and a half ago, was my overall wide receiver one, and he came in with 8.5-inch hands. And when you look at that, Colby Listonby is the only receiver that fits my archetype, which is the 5'10 to 6 foot, 190, 205 pounds. In that range, he's the only guy with smaller hands than Luther Burden that fits that, and the only successful player in the archetype that was in the bottom 25 in hand size was George Pickens, right? And George Pickens, I think, is at 9 or 9 1/8 or something, maybe 8 7/8, something like this, a little bit bigger. 8.5-inch hands for me is a big, big red flag. But when you look at the profile, 3.7% drop rate, not bad, not bad. 55% of his yards in college football came after the catch. And that's more than anybody that we'll talk about in the top 10. I think Savion Williams had like almost 70%, but Savion, for honest purposes and just to keep it tight, Savion Williams is more of a running back to me than he is a receiver, but we can talk about that at some point. But Luther Burden, I think the one thing you hit on is, other than Travis Hunter or next to Travis Hunter, this is the guy, if I'm going to draft somebody in projection, and in NFL draft circles right now, it's like late first, probably not, probably going to be the first receiver off the board in the second round conversation right now. This is a guy for me, and I've gotten kickback on this, but like you think about like the Eagles, allowing like the Eagles to get a guy like this to play in the slot and the dynamo that this guy brings to the table, it's not fair. It wouldn't be fair. And this is a guy that has the upside to move outside and to, become upside to become a DJ Moore, and then up into that next tier potentially if he's in the right spot. So I love everything Luther Burden brings to the table. It's my exact – it's the exact thing that I look for in a prospect. Man, this guy ran a 4.40. There's not a lot of red on this guy's sorry, my dog just barked at me. There's not a lot of red on this guy's profile. I love every bit about it except for the hand size and obviously the tick down in output this past year.
At number six overall, Cody and Trashman have him at seven. I have him at six. Is Trey Harris from Ole Miss, a redshirt senior, 6 foot two and a half, 205 pounds, ran a 4.54 40. As far as the and then the one thing that really pops out just as far as his profile. The other thing that we need to say about Luther Burden is he has one of the youngest breakout ages of this whole class too. Trey Harris, similarly, not as good a breakout age, but only 20 years old whenever he got his breakout. But just this last season, even though it was cut short a little bit by injuries, just an outrageous, completely outrageous 5.15 yards per route run, which is absurd. He brings to mind guys like Marvin Jones.
Limited games, though.
Yeah, limited games for sure. But like I said, small sample, but not that small a sample. It's not like it was just one game that he did it on.
Yeah.
He brings to mind guys like Marvin Jones, Keon Coleman, Cedric Tillman, Nico Collins, Cortland Sutton. This is the kind of guy that we're talking about here. My main issue with him is it's an issue with Cody too. But it's another kind of let's tap the brakes here on the Lane Kiffin offense, right? Is it too gimmicky? Is it going to work? Right? Is this skill set going to translate? People will say, well, you know, AJ Brown, all that stuff. Well, it's a different time now. So you can't just look at Ole Miss and just say that, right? So with Trey Harris, you're looking at another guy that's not necessarily size speed, but certainly great size, really, really good hands, super efficient, but was definitely put in some very, very, very advantageous spots within that offensive scheme.
Yeah. I think Harris is a good receiver. I don't really have much to add because I have some of the biggest questions in this draft class about Dart and about Trey Harris because of this Lane Kiffin offense and just how efficient those two guys worked together. And when you watch the film of Ole Miss, it's like Trey Harris is the first read the majority of the time, and they have other weapons there in Jordan Watkins, who is a super explosive guy in the SEC. Juice Wells, a guy that's been in college for 6 years, JMU, South Carolina, et cetera. Colby Prescorn, who may be probably a UDFA tight end this class and attached to Lane Kiffin. Like, there's good weaponry there. And Trey Harris, back-to-back 900-plus yard seasons. I love my Marvin Jones comp because it's just a really good player that doesn't get a lot of credit but was a successful player in the NFL with upside. I think there's upside to Trey Harris's profile, of course, if he continues to grow. You look at the routes he ran this year. I just found this stat. I mean, Sumer Sports put out a draft guide. It's one of my favorites. I mean, it's probably my favorite this year. They have the route trees listed out in here for all the routes these guys ran in college. The route tree for Trey Harris, 75% of his routes, 70% of his routes were either a go, a curl, or a post. So all breaking on the same thing, right? In breaking, a curl, in breaking, post. 70% of his routes were one of those three.
If you would have asked me, you could have just asked me what you said. 75% are three routes, and I would have those are the three that I would have guessed. It's like if you watch the guy enough, that's a very good point. All right, let's go to the next one. Tied for seventh place, I have Jaden Higgins at eight overall. Cody has him at six. Trashman has him at 10. Jalen Noel I have at seven overall. Cody has him at nine. Trashman has him at eight. So those two guys are tied for seventh. The two Iowa State players. I think Jaden Higgins goes ahead of Jalen Noel. Very different types of players. Whenever we talk about Higgins. You have it here. It's like, you think he's like a Tim Patrick or a big Adam Thielen. I look at him and I see more like an Alan Lazard, Kenny Golladay type of player. With that being said, with the 4-4-7, that takes the Alan Lazard kind of out of the equation for me. Maybe a little bit more like a Golladay. He's 6'4", 217 pounds. Jalen Nowell, a completely different player. I feel like more of a dynamic sort of spark plug type of guy. 5'10", 196. He ran a 4.39. My comp going back to the Senior Bowl was Amon-Ra St. Brown, but since then I've watched him a little bit. I think there's a little bit of Christian Kirk there to him. I know that you liked your Khalil Shakir comp for Jalen Nowell. Two obviously really awesome guys. If you listen to the Roster Watch podcast, you've heard us talk about them in depth. But as far as the final overall rankings, that's where they shook out.
And these are two really good receivers that coming into the process, even though they both had 1,000-yard seasons, which is the first time in the Big 12 since Hollywood Brown and CeeDee Lamb that two receivers on the same team have had 1,000 yards receiving on the same team. I didn't really know much about them. We go into the Senior Bowl, and Jalen Knowles, like, pretty much like, all right, I like this guy. And I think you've comped him to, like, an Amon-Ra type of a potential. And he's a – I wouldn't quite say he's a total alpha of a human being, like the mentality. But he's
a dog.
He's definitely got – yeah, he's definitely got the dog in him. He's an explosive playmaker with the ball in his hands. But I will say Jaden Higgins, and this is the reason that I have Jaden Higgins higher – I have him as my wide receiver 6, and
I think he's going to go higher in the actual draft. I think Higgins will go higher.
And I have Nowell as my 9. Is Higgins, when I got up on him at the Senior Bowl, didn't impress me the most off the hoof when we were just watching practice. But when I got up on him on that second or third day, this guy's a really, really, really good athlete. And not just in the sense of, like, you watch him, you read the numbers off the board. It's like, oh, yeah, Jaden Higgins, you know, he came in 6'4", 217, 4.47. Like, good athlete. Yeah, sure, numbers make sense. But I'm talking about you walk up on the guy, and he's striations head to toe. And you can tell he's cardio fit. And you can tell he's just ready to go out there, and he's long arms. He's going to run every route. He's going to do everything possible to win. And these are, like, you know – he's an interesting one from the comp perspective. He sort of reminds me of, like, being that first receiver drafted in round 2. Would that shock me? No. If he was drafted to have Luther Burden, it wouldn't shock me if an NFL team fell in love with him. I think of, like,
isn't Egbuka going to be the first receiver drafted in round 2?
I sort of think he's going to go at the end of round 1. I think one of Egbuka and Burden goes in round 1. The other one probably is the first receiver off the board in round 2. But what I'm saying is I don't think that Higgins would surprise me. Like, when I think of guys like Nico Collins, who was also a former Senior Bowler, a guy that was disrespected, I would say, I think Higgins has got a better profile than a Nico Collins. And I loved a Nico Collins. Lazard, he played the Xavier Hutchinson role at Iowa State and just, like, played, like, 3 times better than him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that can play big slot. I think of a Michael Thomas from Ohio State. Michael Thomas was not truly maniacal at Ohio State, but he became it at New Orleans. And in a situation, I think that's the comp that made me really start to fall in love more and more with Jaden Higgins throughout the pre-draft process now is I see some Michael Thomas in there. And I haven't written that into the sheet, but I see some Michael Thomas in Jaden Higgins' profile. And I think there's some longevity to him. And it's really what's kind of pressed me up, which would kind of go against everything I've said to this point in the show, is I love the archetype. I love those guys that I explained the height, weight thing, speed, everything already. And I'm generally a little bit lower on these bigger guys. But when they're bigger, like a Nico, and they're good athletes, I like Jaden Higgins a lot. And I didn't think that 2 months ago.
At our number 9 – so number 9 and number 10 are Torrey Horton from Colorado State and Isaiah Bond from Texas. These two teams actually played each other this year. And I think I remember Jahdae Barron doing a pretty good job on Torrey Horton in that game, yeah, for sure. But if you do watch Torrey Horton, what you'll see is he is tall, slightly bit skinnier than I would like. What does he even weigh?
I think he came in at 191 or 190.
No, 6 foot two and a half, 196. He ran a 4.41, and he kind of, whenever we talk about our comps for him, he kind of has some, He has some Josh Reynolds to his game. We also have a little bit of another, oddly, Marvin Jones comp there for him. I think that just it's kind of the tall, skinny kind of comp there with him. Tall, skinny, effective, and just super good with the ball in his hands. 3.45 yards per route run, although that is also a little bit of a smaller sample. He was hurt towards the end of the season there at Colorado State this year. Could, you know, there were reports that he was being offered up to $600K to leave Colorado State, wanted to stay there with his quarterback. Was it Brennan something Brennan F. Nicolosi? I forget what his
Fowler.
Brennan Fowler Nicolosi. And those guys stayed. So, you know, smaller school, all that. But the fact was there were other schools that were pretty hot and heavy after Torrey Horton, and Colorado State had to do a lot to kind of make it right and keep the guy there. As far as Isaiah Bond from Texas, we talked about it. Some kind of knee issues that he had as a transfer coming out of Alabama to Texas. Everybody will remember, I think it was the catch in the Iron Bowl from Milroe to end that game versus Auburn. And then comes to Texas, gets paid like $900K in NIL money, is the presumed wide receiver one, starts the season out kind of looking like it. Only 100 yard game though at Texas during his time there. He was injured for a lot of it. And then there was some talk that he maybe kind of saved himself towards the end of the season. As far as his ability to be out there and everything, there were people around Austin that had questioned, it's like, is this guy really giving it his all to end the season? And that was what a lot of the character stuff that you heard at the combine, that's where that stuff came from. So the issues with that at Alabama and at Texas, but he does have speed for days that you can't deny, running a 4.35 at the Texas Pro Day, which we would adjust to a 4.4, which we didn't need to do because he got a 4.39 at the combine. I think Bond is, higher top speed than Matthew Golden running the 40, which is something that's kind of hard for me to understand, that Matthew Golden runs a 4.29, Bond runs a 4.39, but he generates a higher top speed. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Also, small hands, 8.5-inch hands here in this one. We have him kind of, we think that he's got some Jaylen Waddle to his game and maybe a little bit of D.D. Westbrook. I think as far as Bond, I'm the lowest. No, I have him at 10. You have him at 11. Trashman loves him at 6. We all have Torrey Horton around number 8 or number 9.
Yeah, I love Horton. Horton's a guy that, just to easily explain it, I wished he would have came out this past season out of Colorado State. He's a guy that back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. He goes in, should have came out last year, like I said. He goes in, gets hurt, has to have surgery, comes out pre-draft. I think I had him in the teens. I was really high on him in the teens. I think I would still be high on him today. I think this is going to be one of the higher ranks you'll see, is having Torrey Horton personally at 8 in the space. But I was expecting this build that was, you know, Jerome Simpson-esque, or like this, a stretched Devonta Smith, which would have been like a 6'3 and like a 182. That was my expectation based on,
well, that's how he looks.
Listings everywhere else. He came in 6'2.5, 196, put that weight on, and then ran the 4.41. Now, again, he did have knee injury, but that knee injury happened this year. He had surgery, came back, and ran a 4.41, which I thought was awesome and kind of helped boost his profile up a little bit. Like Trey Harris, his yards per run's a little bit broken. His is 3.45, which is very good, but a little more broken. The Josh Reynolds comp is mine. That's my favorite. And people will say, well, that's a terrible comp. It's like, well, Josh Reynolds was the guy that followed in line after Mike Evans and was the receiver at Texas A&M that was – obviously not in the same conversation, but he was sought after. And I think a guy like Torrey Horton, if he gets to a Josh Reynolds or exceeds a Josh Reynolds, it's going to be a very successful career, because you remember Josh Reynolds in LA when he was the third receiver with Kupp and Woods was fun to watch. So I love Torrey Horton, probably one of my favorite, probably my most favorite prospect at the wide receiver position this year. And then Bond has just slowly trickled down throughout the entire pre-draft process. A guy that, you know, told us he was going to run a 4.2, maybe 4.19, didn't do that. got another opportunity at the pro day. Didn't do that. We haven't heard the best or the most glowing reviews off the field for Isaiah Bond behind the lock or in the locker rooms and stuff like this. The small hands go into account. I see some Jalen Waddle there. When you look at the overall profile for Isaiah Bond, it ain't great. It ain't like a typical player that comes in at 5'10", 190 pounds, and you're thinking, you know, you're going to get some upside here. You're going to potentially see a career output, a career projection for a guy like Bond would have been, he goes to Texas this past year and he goes super dynamo, but he did that a couple times. He got the ball in his hand against Florida, against Michigan, against Colorado State, and he turned up field. He created space, created yak. I think he had the number was 49% of his catches, 49% of his yards were after the catch this past year. So nearly half of his yards came after the catch. He's very good with the ball in his hand. He's not quite Xavier Worthy. He's not quite Luther Burden. He's not quite these guys that can break tackles and truly take any football to the house. But he's very good. I just have questions because I don't know what the real ceiling is. And it kind of reminds me of a Jalen Waddle, where there's a lot there that you like, but there's not a lot there that you really love and you think can take you to the next level. He's just a really good receiver.
All right, so we'll get out on this one. Let me ask you a tough question. Because for me, the answer here is Jack Besh from TCU. Who's the one player that you wish we had in the cumulative top 10 that's not in the cumulative top 10?
Honestly, nobody. There's not a single receiver outside the top 10 that I think deserves to be in that conversation. I think Alec Ayemaner is in that conversation. Jack Besh should be. Jalen Royals, I think I could tell you a story from Utah State. He's one of my favorites. But the one guy that probably deserves it the most was overshadowed at Arkansas this year. He's 6'2", 7'8", 212 pounds. He ran a 4.43, and this guy's family is maniacal. At the combine, they would not shut up. And that's got to be the one, the only. He's got a mullet. Got to give him a little bit of respect. We could potentially see Isaac Tesla jump into some people's top 10s after some good draft capital comes down in Green Bay.